Brian, that's an interesting name, Oak Bio. What is Oak Bio? What do you do?
We love the name of our company and the symbol of the oak. That's a tree that's indigenous to the area where the company was founded. In California, the live oaks are ubiquitous type of tree in the hillsides around here. But at any rate, what the company does is you could describe as using a method of reuse of waste carbon, including CO2 and other carbons from greenhouse gas emissions from industry, and using these as a feedstock to replace petrochemical feedstocks for the creation of chemicals on a mass scale.
With you being the chief scientific officer, along with being the founder of the company, what got you into this? What is your interest there?
Well, I'm a biochemist by training and a life scientist, and I became very interested in clean technology and green technology. The company was originally founded by myself and Dr. Russell Howard, who's former CEO of Maxygen. So both of us had this vision in common, which is wanting to employ biological techniques to solve these issues of creating renewable chemicals and removing or absorbing greenhouse gases and other waste carbon from industry. In other words, we saw the opportunity, it's important to say, but in terms of a scientific problem, we saw that this was a possibility and developed technology to make it a reality.
Now, the Climate Change and Emissions Management Corporation, your company was one of 24 out of well over 300 applications to the Grand Challenge. What is it that your company proposed to do in order to receive the Grand Challenge Prize?
To put it in a nutshell, it's to capture flue gas produced in Alberta, industrial waste gases, and convert that into the chemical N-butanol. N-butanol is a four-carbon alcohol that's a biofuel, very similar in characteristic to gasoline that we use today. It's naturally 87 octane. But importantly also, it's a chemical feedstock that has an existing market of over $9 billion a year and is one of the things produced by oil companies, petrochemical companies today, chemical companies, produced N-butanol, which is, one of the major uses of it is it's used to make acrylic. But as I said, it's also a very viable biofuel that has a lot of the characteristics of gasoline and is definitely superior to ethanol as a standalone fuel for cars. But in the project, what we actually did was we created relationships with two major industries in Alberta, one of which was a cement plant which burns coal, and we collected flue gas, sent a team to Canada, and we collected flue gas directly from their operation and brought it back to Sunnyvale. With that flue gas, we were able to make N-butanol, and this was a very exciting result. Then, in addition, we were in partnership with a Canadian tar sands oil upgrader, able to collect flue gas or waste gas from their operation. This was a different operation where they collected the waste gas for us, so we negotiated and handled its transfer from Canada back to the United States, including sending a facilitator to Canada to do this. And then from that gas, we also, using the upgrader's waste gas, able to produce N-butanol, and as well as producing biodegradable and renewable plastics. So those were results we got. They're quite exciting, in both cases.
So, how does your technology actually work?
Well, it works with microbes, which are actually bacteria. If one understands how plants take sunlight energy and CO2 from the atmosphere and grow, essentially, right? And some plants, we make chemicals or foods or other things from plants. Everyone's familiar with that. And they use sunlight energy, carbon dioxide from the air. Well, our microbes use energy from hydrogen, and they absorb the CO2, the carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, as well as a number of other toxic chemicals which are in flue gas. And so one of our technological benefits is We don't have to clean the gas at all. We use raw flue gas. And with the energy from hydrogen and the carbon from the flue gas, our microbes are able to convert and manufacture bioplastics. And in this case of this grant, the main focus was a biofuel and petrochemical feedstock and butanol. And this is the core of the way that technology works in a nutshell.
Did you have to search for the right kind of microbes?
Oh, absolutely. Our microbes were developed over a process where we first took microbes and using actual real flue gas, raw flue gas from a cement factory in California, we developed a strain of flue gas resistant microbes that grew about 300% better than the original microbe in terms of flue gas. And then we have continually improved that since then. Then, in partnership with the Ohio State University and with a technology developed under a grant from the Department of Energy in the United States, we were able to have that microbe engineered to produce N-butanol. And so we have a sponsored research agreement with the Ohio State University, and this is a partnership where we're developing better and better microbes to absorb gases and produce N-butanol and potentially other chemicals.
So would you say you're still at the lab bench stage?
Correct. We're right now at the 20-liter stage where we regularly run 20-liter bioreactors, and we've been using gases that we've brought in. We've also in the past operated a co-located facility at a cement plant, but that was also lab scale. Right now, our company is looking to go to pilot scale. So our next step is to go to pilot scale. And we're, in fact, looking forward to the CCEMC Grand Challenge Round 2 because we have very, very strong data and very relevant data considering we've used real Alberta flue gases in our research to go to pilot scale. And we very much would like to do that in Alberta, Canada, at a co-located facility.
So when you get to the point where this is commercialized, how will things be set up?
Well, ideally, our facility would be co-located at the site of production of the CO2. It's a tremendous benefit to reduce cost and really, you know, feasibility, one could say. At the same time, it is possible that a co-located facility at a large CO2 producer could take CO2 brought in from smaller CO2 producers where co-location would not make sense. In other words, CO2 producers that produced less than some threshold where it became economically viable to create a facility there or produce CO2 intermittently. These are both very important sources of CO2, smaller release point sources and intermittent ones versus large ones. I should point out that, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but a cement plant, for example, will produce over 1 million tons of CO2 a year. And oil refineries can produce sometimes in excess of several million tons of CO2 and a lot of other greenhouse gases every year. So the scale is very important to realize. If one is creating a facility co-located at either one of these types of industries, the potential product that we could produce using our process could run into the billions of dollars per site.
How fast do the microbes work to do the conversion that you need?
Well, they work very, very fast. And that's one of the very nice things about the microbes. They're very, very high efficiency, and they're very, very fast. And so, you know, we can see, you know, again, at lab scale, at the scale we're at, we can see tremendous reductions in the CO2 content of a gas stream, you know, even literally within seconds. And the ultimate level, we can start with streams, you know, with really any amount of CO2 up to 80, 90, 100%, it doesn't matter. And with a lot of other gases, SOx and NOx, hydrogen sulfide, etc. And if one were inclined to do it, our process can be used to reduce the CO2 concentrations all the way down to below atmospheric level, ambient atmospheric level. The highest efficiency is with concentrations of CO2 above 0.5%, which, again, is higher than ambient CO2, but much, much lower than what flue gas levels of CO2 are.
receiving the funding from the Grand Challenge, what has that meant to you and your company and your research?
Well, it advanced our research tremendously. There was more to it than just the money we got from CCMC. The fact that we got the grant from CCMC really drove our collaborations with these two critical Alberta industries and facilitated us, you know, even if we'd had our own money from some other source, I doubt we could have gotten the partnerships we got and the access to these very, very important types of flue gas. And I should say, you know, the actual operation of going and collecting flue gas and bringing it back to California was not a simple task. But the value of the data we got is tremendous. We know now that our microbes can use a mix of refinery waste gases, and those gases contain hydrogen already. So in that case, we're not having to add the hydrogen, which greatly reduces costs. So we know we have a great application for the oil upgrading and oil refining business. And also, we were able to test flue gas from a cement plant that burns coal. And our previous experience with cement plants had only been with cement plants that burned petroleum coke, which to the layman, really what it comes down to is the coal gases are considered to be much more toxic overall than the cleaner burning petroleum coke. We were quite surprised and happy that our process worked very, very well with the flue gas from a coal burning cement plant, really comparable, actually slightly better data than we got from a petroleum coke burning cement plant, but really I think that's just because the coal flue gas had slightly higher CO2.
Brian, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.